This episode of Beyond the Uniform is sponsored by Storybox. People trust each other more than they trust advertising. Storybox provides companies with the tools they need to take the best things their customers are saying and use these testimonials to drive more sales and referrals. You can find out if Storybox is right for you at StoryboxLite.com. If you employ a veteran, we'll also give you a 10% discount. That's StoryboxLite.com. Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. My goal is to give those on active duty and those who have transitioned different tips and advice on how to succeed in their civilian career. Today's episode number 126 with Nicholas Loudon.
Look, here, at the end of the day, nobody's ever going to come to you as a veteran. You know, they're going to thank you for your service, but they're not going to make a job for you, nor do you want them to make a job for you. But the trick is getting in as many people's Rolodexes as possible. So I really did that kind of unwittingly while I was at West Point.
Well, first of all, special thanks to Matthew Caldwell from episode number 112 for making the introduction to Nick. Nick is a fantastic guy. I took a lot away from this interview. I think no matter whether you've been out for 20 years or you're still on active duty, I think you're going to benefit from Nick's story. So Nick, you'll see, has been really successful in very, very different industries. He's one of the rare examples where he's jumped around to industries that seem to have little to nothing in common with each other, and despite that has carved out a role that's been very successful for him. What I love about his stories is his transparency in talking about just really checking one's ego at the door, rolling up your sleeves, whatever task you're given, just knocking it out of the park, and being really humble and content in whatever you're doing. I think that he has a lot of great advice on networking, on interviewing, and on finding what you want to do for a living. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes, everything we talk about, links to the different resources he recommends. For those of you who haven't had a chance yet to leave a review on iTunes, I wanted to give a quick call out to JW Shine. Thank you so much. He just gave a great, he or she just gave a great review last week. If you haven't had a chance on iTunes to give us a positive review, it really helps us get the word out about this. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with Nick. Well, joining me today in Miami, Florida is Nick Loudon. Nick, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Hey, thanks, Justin.
So, wanted to give listeners a background. Nick is the Chief of Staff for Eastern Airlines. He started out at West Point, served in the Army as an infantry officer for 8 years before going to the Teachers College at Columbia University to earn his Master of Arts in Organizational Psychology and Leadership. He's worked at the e-learning company Rowan Technologies as both a program manager and COO, and joined Eastern Airlines about a year and a half ago. And I wanted to thank Matt Caldwell from episode 113 for the intro. He had described Nick as doing one of the best transitions from the Army, and that much of the lessons he's learned would be applicable to veterans. So I know Matt's setting a high bar for you, Nick, but appreciate your sharing your story with us.
It was one of the best or one of the weirdest, I'm not sure which.
Well, maybe to set the scene, you know, take us through how you approached the decision to leave the Army.
Yeah, so that was a difficult one. I'm a little bit unique because I stayed in the Army for such a long amount of time. You know, I stayed in the Army until I was a major, and usually at that point, people have made the decision to stay in to retirement. So my active duty career from the time I graduated West Point to the time I got out was 10 and a half years. And, you know, what a lot of people said to me was, well, why would you get out now? It's all downhill from here. And there were a couple different reasons. And, you know, what I always tell people that are still in the Army is if you still love the Army or if you still love the services, definitely don't get out. Stay in it. If you're excited about the next chapter of your service career, definitely stay in it. Now, a lot of people have, you know, family considerations, things like that. And in a weird way, the fact that I didn't have a family, I wasn't married, didn't have kids, actually made it much easier for me to get out of the Army. So I guess the bottom line to answer your question is I decided to get out of the Army just because I wasn't that excited about what was next in my career. So basically, probably 2 years into my career at West Point as a TAC officer, I made that decision and I started preparing to get out.
And you are the first person I've had on the show that went to do a master's at arts in organizational psychology and leadership. My wife, actually, as a side note, she went to Teachers College as well. And so I'm familiar with that program, but I'm curious if you could maybe share a little bit with listeners about what Teachers College is, and then how did you end up there? What even led you there?
Well, you know, so people who are in the Army are probably familiar with this. When you leave company command, or when you're preparing to complete company command, you kind of have a decision point, and that's either you get to do what's called a broadening experience. And one of the choices was to go back and work on West Point as faculty. And there are a lot of different options there. One part of the menu allows you to go straight back and work as a military instructor. One option is going through graduate school and then actually, whether it's a 1 or 2 year program and being a part-time professor. So the program that I actually went through was a program that sent you to Teachers College. You got your Master's of Arts in a year, and then you went on to West Point to be a tactical officer.
Okay, awesome, awesome. And so, I guess, would you have any advice for people considering that degree? Like, what did you take away from that, and how has that helped you in your career?
Well, I mean, so first of all, as far as the degree goes, it was kind of, there wasn't really an option on what I could major in. So it was kind of a package deal. Like, you go to Columbia, you get this master's degree, and then you go back and you get this role at West Point. So initially I just did it. I was attracted to it, one, because it got me to West Point, two, because it got me a master's. And organizational psychology was just something I frankly didn't really know much about until I got into it. But what I will say is, for that point in my career, organizational psychology was a really cool master's program, because what it allowed me to do, at that point I had 7.5 years active duty Army experience, and it really allowed me kind of the opportunity to look back and reflect on my leadership experiences, leading organizations, being part of organizations, and, understanding what may have been going on in various situations and various organizations I was in.
And so your first role once you got out of the military was at Rowan Technologies. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. And that's kind of a funny story as well. So when I decided to get out of the Army and, decided to transition out of the military, for me, I really came to the conclusion more, came to the conclusion first what I didn't want to do. And one of the things that, I didn't really like about the military was, the bureaucratic system or processes that you inevitably have to deal with. So kind of what I decided was, hey, if I'm leaving the military, this is one aspect of the military that I really dislike. So let me think about the organizations that I don't want to be a part of, as opposed to the organizations that I do want to be a part of. So I came to the conclusion pretty rapidly that, a big organization or a big company like a Bank of America or a GE wasn't really going to be a good fit for me. I just didn't want to go work for, one more large bureaucratic organization. So when I decided to get out, I really only interviewed at startups and much smaller companies, which was pretty cool. And I got a few job offers. None were quite the right fit. And eventually, luckily, one of the benefits of staying in the Army for 10 and a half years is the fact that you still have the GI Bill. So even though the military paid for a master's program for me already, I still had the GI Bill to go back and get my MBA. And with the GI Bill comes a really, really generous housing allowance. So when I first transitioned out of the military, I actually was just going to school full time at Fordham, going back and get my MBA. And it was at that point that I actually had some friends who ran Rowan Technologies who reached out to me and kind of offered me a position.
And for someone on active duty who might not be familiar with it, how would you describe Rowan Technologies and what they do?
So Rowan's kind of an interesting company. Rowan actually started, as you pointed out, it's an e-learning company. And it kind of started as a philanthropic effort. So a gentleman by the name of Vinny Viola, who's also a pretty well-known West Point grad and veteran, decided to help out the history department in rewriting their history curriculum. And that was the philanthropic part of it. He agreed to kind of foot part of that bill. But in doing so, he made the history department agree to kind of revolutionize how they taught history and really leverage technology. So for those unfamiliar, West Point has a two-semester course called Military Art and History. I think it's 72 chapters total, and, you know, kind of the moniker is everything from Plato to NATO is covered in this history course. So that was initially the product, but we also had the rights to kind of turn around and monetize that product and sell that product outside of West Point. And then a large portion of those proceeds would actually be turned around and pumped back into West Point through the Association of Graduates. So that was kind of their flagship product, and it's really cool. I mean, you can find it online, and it's this interactive military history book. And the coolest aspect of it are these maps that were kind of the first of their kind, these battle maps that really made the experience of figuring out what happened in a battle much more interactive and immersive. And then beyond that, after they did that for one department at West Point, some other departments asked to have something similar, and similar products were created. It's a small company. I'd say at this point they're geared much more toward kind of a not-for-profit status as opposed to a for-profit status. When I first started, I was brought on as a project manager, essentially, and I was literally working part-time, and that's a whole other story I can get into. Literally working part-time as a project manager, and then it kind of snowballed, and I ended up kind of quasi-running that company.
I'd love to hear that story, too. That sounds actually really interesting.
Well, you know, so kind of here's my take on a transition. You know, you can look at it from an economic standpoint. You can look at it from a what do I want to do standpoint. And then also for me, when you talk about things like networking, that definitely played a factor, or actually a really big factor in my transition, or at least my success in that transition. So I guess first and foremost, I had known Mr. Viola for several years before my transition. I never really wanted to go to him and ask for a job. And that was just kind of a thing that I personally had. But whenever, you know, I made sure to stay in touch with him. I became really good friends with, you know, some of his right-hand guys. And they're all former military as well, and they helped talk me through the transition, talk me through kind of the interview process, stuff like that. But, you know, look, here, at the end of the day, nobody's ever going to come to you as a veteran. You know, they're going to thank you for your service, but they're not going to make a job for you, nor do you want them to make a job for you. But the trick is getting in as many people's Rolodexes as possible. So I really did that kind of unwittingly while I was at West Point. So whenever Mr. Viola needed something, or he had a question about what was going on at West Point, he would call me, or if he had a friend or relative that he wanted to give a tour at West Point too, he'd give me a ring, and I'd always be more than happy to do that. And I not only did it for him, I did it for everybody humanly possible. And in doing so, I got my name in a bunch of different Rolodexes, one of whom is Mr. Viola's. So at any rate, fast forward, I'm now at Fordham, going to school full time, getting my MBA, literally living off my GI Bill. That was my only form of income. And I accepted that, and I was able to accept that risk, again, because I didn't have a wife, I didn't have kids. And I kind of looked at it as, hey, you know, I've been in situations where I've not made money before, I can survive, I'll just go be a full-time student. But in doing so, and being in New York City, and being in that one specific Rolodex, eventually Rowan Technologies had a project manager quit on them. When that project manager quit, there was a kind of a, what at the time was deemed kind of a critical and essential project for the future of the company, was kind of at risk. So they reached out to me and they said, hey, you know, we have a full-time job for you, but it's also, you know, you were a major in the Army. You could probably handle, like, project management on the side. You can make it part-time as well. And literally I said, well, and I had to think about it for a couple days, because my whole plan was to go get an MBA in 2 years, maybe do a little bit of a hustle on the side and make some money that way. But I thought about it and I went back to him and said, well, all right, guys, I'm not going to come on full time. I'm going to come on part time. You can pay me hourly. And they literally paid me hourly, throughout that entire year. I kept track of my own hours and submitted them. But what I soon found is once I got involved, everything started to snowball. And before I knew it, I was working 40, 50, 60 hours a week, just trying to make things better, which was cool and good. And I guess that's the next big point is once you get those opportunities, even if those opportunities are for, you know, a minimal amount of money, you make the best of them. So, to be honest with you, I didn't really bust my butt to impress anybody. I just busted my butt to try to make things better. And I think a lot of veterans are very good at doing that. And before I knew it, I then had a full-time job and, you know, the economics kind of followed that. So another piece of advice I give any veteran is like, hey, when you're out, you're talking to headhunters, you're talking to various employers, you're going to the veteran internship programs, don't necessarily look at the initial compensation or the initial role. Look at what the potential upside is. So, and what do I mean when I say that? Well, you know, if you go, again, I hate to beat up like the GEs of the world, but if you go there, there's upside for sure, but there might not be rapid upside. So it's going to take you 5, 10, 15 years to maybe reach that executive level and a lot of work. But you'll start out with a pretty decent base salary. There are a ton of small businesses out there and a ton of people that own multiple businesses that are just looking for somebody that's willing to jump into a situation and grind it out and work really hard. And they're going to reward those people. And I was just really fortunate enough to find myself in one of those situations. So, you know, for me, I started out and, you know, I wasn't really making any money. It didn't really matter to me. And my role was like, literally, you know, you look at my LinkedIn, it says program manager. In my world, you kind of make up whatever title you want. Titles really don't mean anything to us. But, you know, I was kind of like the lower management. But the potential for upside was enormous. So, you know, I got in, I made the best of it. And, you know, within a year, you know, I was in a far different place than I was when I started. So, and I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from that.
Yeah, I love that thought. I mean, what I'm taking away from what you shared is this thought of, I love what you said about no one's going to hand a veteran a job and just being in as many Rolodexes and top of mind with as many people as possible. And I also love this thought of you know, wherever you go, put your head down and do your best to improve it. And I love that distinction, because I think that would resonate with most veterans. Is it's not about doing work to be noticed. It's just literally, you know, it sounds like you started working there part-time and you just started to find more and more ways to make it better. And that, you know, led to you doing that for full-time. And then I'm imagining eventually being promoted to chief operations officer. So I love that, because I think that's very applicable for a listener, no matter what career they go into. It's just really focusing on adding value, and a lot of good things come from that.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of another part of that is, you know, when I think back on it, and at this point you have me, after the end of a very busy day, you have me reflecting on the last 3 years, which is a little crazy, but kind of cool to do. You know, I think back on it, and, you know, when I first got to Rowan, I didn't know anything about software development. I didn't know anything about content development. Frankly, I didn't know, like, it was a tech company, and the majority of our employees were either designers, digital designers, or developers, software developers. I knew nothing about that space, absolutely nothing. Never mind the fact that the majority of our employees were 10 years younger than me. So I bring that up because one thing I had to do, and I think I've always been pretty decent about it, but I really kind of had to check my ego at the door and just go in and say, hey, guys, I have no idea what I'm doing. Like, I don't know what you do. I have no idea what the lingo is, but I'm willing to learn. As opposed to, you know, some of the people I've seen transition that get most frustrated, especially officers or, you know, senior enlisted folks, they walk in and they think that because they had experience leading 150, 280, however many people, that makes them king right off the bat. But there's still a lot that you have to learn, regardless of what type of organization you go into. So, you know, another big recommendation I'd have for anybody is, like, check your ego at the door, understand and admit the fact that you don't know anything, but what you can always fall back on from your military experience are the kind of those basic leadership principles on, you know, working hard, being the first to the office, knowing how to manage people. I think there's a universal principle, and it's in the military, but it's certainly outside the military, that if you take care of your people, they'll take care of you. So that was one of the big things I learned from my transition. And then that's probably a good segue to, you know, my next job, which was also working for the same owner of Rowan, was invested in an airline. Another industry I had no idea. I didn't know the difference between a Boeing and an Airbus. But I had done well at Rowan. I had kind of, in his mind, I had done well enough to get thrown into the airline industry. And then I basically just kind of hit reset and started all over again, doing the exact same thing, except for a much larger, more complex organization.
I love that, because it sounds like, again, this whole thought of being in people's Rolodex is like you worked your butt off and did a good job at Rowan, and the owner, I imagine, saw that. And so when this position came up at Eastern Airlines, you know, you are one person who's top of mind because he knows the quality of your work and he has that history with you. And so what I love about that, if I'm hearing your story correctly, is it's really an endorsement for whatever you do, doing the best job, and that can be rewarded by, you know, if you're top of mind with people, that can be rewarded with additional opportunity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also kind of having a mentality of, maybe I don't know everything about this situation, but I'll be able to jump in and figure it out. And I think a lot of military people have that mentality, you know, from whether it's from deployments overseas or changing MOSs or, you know, whatever it is. I think in the last 15 years, we've operated in a pretty ambiguous operating environment. And the one thing that military people and veterans really do bring to the table is this ability to jump into these ambiguous situations, maybe not know everything, but kind of figure it out and make things happen.
Yeah, and I really appreciated what you said about checking your ego at the door. I think that applies to most of the people I've interviewed where you do come out. Most of us, when we get out, we're at an area of comfort. You're an 03, you're an 05, like you're very senior and you're used to being in charge. And I think that's fine if you go into an industry that's very closely adjacent to the military, if you do government contracting or something like that. But the further away you get from the military, the further you have to take a step back. And that often means working alongside people 5 years younger and still being the person who knows the least about what they're doing. And so I appreciated what you said about just checking your ego at the door and having that curiosity and willingness to roll up your sleeves, but not assuming it was just going to come to you, like being the first one in the office and really applying yourself to rapidly try to catch up.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's I'm finishing my time here at this company, and I've you know, again, roles and titles are very ambiguous in my world with our ownership. But this is the second company I've worked full-time on. I've done some special projects for some of his other companies. So I've been involved with those. But yeah, you're 100% right. And you need to be able to check your ego at the door and roll up your sleeves and just get into some of these situations and be comfortable with being uncomfortable sometimes. And I over this past year, I definitely had to do that.
And I think it's also interesting, you're the first person in the airlines industry or aviation industry that I've had on the show. Could you talk maybe a little bit about what is Eastern Airlines? And also, you know, you were chief of staff there. I know that the title doesn't matter, but like what sort of work did you do at Eastern Airlines?
Oh, boy. So I think my experience here could probably be a case study. But yeah, I'll try to hit some high level wave tops and be cognizant that I'm being recorded because there's a lot of scar tissue that this company left me with, but also a lot of learning that happened as well.
Those two usually go go hand in hand, I'm betting too.
Yeah. That doesn't kill you makes you better and stronger. But, you know, I guess just to rewind the tape, Eastern Airlines was one of the big four airlines way back in the day, 60s, 70s, 80s. Went bankrupt in the early 90s. And when I say one of the big four airlines, I mean it was as big as Delta, American, United. I think Pan Am, TWA were some other big ones back in that day. But at any rate, it went bankrupt. So there's an entrepreneur that was an airline industry guy who wanted to resurrect this name because it, as a brand, Eastern actually has a lot of great brand awareness, especially in South Florida. So the plan initially was to relaunch the airline. But when I say relaunch it, you can't just like relaunch a bankrupt company. So what they did was they bought up all the intellectual property and the trademarks, and then started an airline from scratch, which had nothing to do with the old Eastern, but they were able to name it Eastern because they owned the intellectual property and the trademarks. So interesting concept. You go out and raising money for an airline can be very difficult because they're really pretty tough investments and very challenging for a number of reasons. They're capital intensive.
What's the quote? Is it, I forget who said it, but it's like the biggest.
How do you make a millionaire? I think Buffett said it. Yeah. You know, it's been quoted by a few people. You know, how do you make someone a millionaire? You start with a billionaire and
start
they
an
invest
airline.
In an airline, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I, trust me, part of that scar tissue is that quote dancing in the back of my head about my boss. So, you know, at any rate, the boss invested in the company at some point, and you know, the business model originally was, hey, we need this amount of money to start up the airline, and you know, we're at that point, once we certify the airline with the FAA and the Department of Transportation, that's the other reason why airlines are very difficult. They're heavily regulated. Then we're going to start out in the charter space, and we're going to kind of bootstrap up into scheduled service. So you have, in the airline industry, you have a bunch of different types of air carriers. A charter carrier, most people think of charter planes as like a Cessna or like a private jet, but there are also a lot of charter carriers out there that fly 737s, 767s. I think most veterans are familiar with Omni Airlines or World Airlines that flew them back and forth from deployments. So charter carriers do that as well. Charter carriers oftentimes carry professional sports teams, which was one of the reasons why my boss invested. And then charter carriers also do what's called, well, they partner with these people called tour operators. And tour operators are essentially like Apple Vacations, other people that maybe own properties or kind of very have a very specific knowledge of a very specific market. And the tour operators will actually rent out these rent out the planes on what are called track charter programs. So these track charter programs look very, very similar to scheduled service. The only difference is the airline operates everything having to do with the airplane. So crew, maintenance, insurance, operations, operational control. The tour operator actually carries all the risk and sells the tickets. So by the way, I had to learn all this stuff in the last year. So the idea was to get the airline up and running, start as a charter carrier, and eventually bootstrap, you know, create enough kind of positive EBITDA where we could bootstrap our way to scheduled service. Scheduled service being like a Delta or a Spirit, you know, somebody, a carrier that actually is responsible for selling their own tickets. And I won't get into the scar tissue part too much, but it turned out that concept of the operation or that business model just didn't quite work. And there were a lot of reasons why it didn't. They're, you know, one of the bigger ones were the planes that we decided to lease, 737 aircraft. But a very, very, very long story short, over a year of learning about the most capital intensive, tough businesses there is to participate in, I got to learn a lot about mergers and acquisitions. And we actually recently merged Eastern Airlines into a competitor of ours, which is good for the investors, and I think over the long term, good for everybody involved and the best possible outcome. So having said all that, you know, that's why I'm heading back to New York, and I'll probably, we still have a little bit or a stake in the combined airline, so I'll do that and just wait to be thrown at the next problem set, whatever that might be. And, you know, and I guess to circle back and completely answer your question, what's a chief of staff do? So it's within an airline. I think chief of staff roles have become more and more popular. They're kind of this role where CEOs have this go-to person that just kind of physicalizes for them and like actions on items for them and just gets stuff done for them. So initially I was sent down to be the chief executive officer's chief of staff. At the time, he's no longer with us. Another gentleman stepped up and took his place. I kind of maintained, I think initially my title was executive director of special projects, and then nobody knew what that was. And then it changed to chief of staff. And what I'll tell you is like, probably over the last six to eight months, I do everything and more that a chief operating officer would do. So, but again, you know, titles aren't like a big deal in my world. So, you know, it's, you know, whatever your title is, your duties and responsibilities are everything. So,
yep.
And that's just kind of how I've played it for the last 6 to 8 months.
You know, so one thing that jumps out as you're talking about this is a lot of the interviews I've had, you know, the person has built up an expertise. So I interviewed the CEO of Pepsi, and his expertise was around like food and beverage. It was his whole career. And then I've interviewed people who build up expertise in, let's say, operations. And what strikes me about your story that I can't think of anyone else I've interviewed is that I don't see any overlap between Rowan Technologies and Eastern Airlines. Like, they seem so completely different. And I'm just wondering, like, what is the skill or the attribute that made it possible to really be successful at two very wildly different industries?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think also, just to add to that, what you'll find is even people within certain industries have a very specific expertise. And, you know, so whether it's a sales function or an operations function or a revenue type driving function or a finance function, people tend to go into specific industries and then within those industries kind of find a much more specific niche. I describe myself as a management generalist for the most part. I've had to learn every piece and part of those niches, just like most executives would. What allowed me to do it? Gosh, I don't really know. I think if there's one attribute I could point to as what's made me successful, I think what's made me successful is I really enjoy learning, to be honest with you. And you know, if you talk to my high school teachers or even my West Point professors, they might not think I really enjoy learning, but I have a curiosity just about things. And when I get thrown into situations, I want to learn as much as possible about them. You know, so for instance, when I was first sent to Eastern Airlines, I didn't know the difference between a Boeing and an Airbus. So I literally, during my free time, I just scanned the internet and looked at pictures and read blogs on how you could tell the difference. And it took me like 9-10 months before I figured out, like, oh, okay, that's an Airbus, that's a Boeing, that's how I can tell the difference. But yeah, I think that was very helpful for me. And you know, it's just kind of one of those things. It was a situation I was thrown into, and I don't want to say I'm hyper competitive, but I have a desire to do well at whatever I do. So, I mean, if you threw me into a boiling pot of water, I think I would, you know, try to make the best of it.
That's,
you know,
awesome.
And truth be told, and this is where I'm exceptionally fortunate. You know, you talk to guys like Matt Caldwell and some of the other people that are veterans that we work with, and our boss, who's a veteran, kind of his partners and some of his coworkers who are veterans. You know, I'm really lucky. I would not have spent the last year plus doing what I did, going through what I had to go through and like trying to learn a new industry, and to figure out what was wrong with a failing company, trying to fix that company and get that company to a logical conclusion that, you know, saved the shareholders money, you know, and some of the like really tough things that come along with restructuring a company and having a lot of people being really pissed off at you. I would not have gone through all of that if I didn't enjoy the people I work with. And I think, you know, a lot of veterans, that's one of the like number one things that they miss about the military is kind of the camaraderie and who they work with. And, you know, I will tell you, I'm one of the very fortunate ones, and the people I work with are just as great as the people I worked with in the Army. And I think that's helpful whenever you have to wake up every day and maybe go do a job that you don't necessarily like, when you have peers and you have superiors that are just awesome. So, I think it's a lot of different things, but those are the few that come to mind.
What about, I always like to ask about resources, and particularly, you know, when I ask this, I have in mind the person who's on a ship or a deployment or on active duty somewhere and is just trying to think of things they can start to do to prepare, but also for, you know, maybe the veteran listening who's been out for a couple of years and they're just trying to do what they can to get ahead. So I'm curious, are there any resources, and that could be books, programs, podcasts, movies, anything that, you know, that's helped you in your civilian career that you would recommend to someone on active duty or a veteran listening?
Yeah, you know, sure. I think, you know, I can give you my personal opinion, and I can give you examples of kind of what I use and what I've used over the years. So well prior to transitioning, I was always interested in business. And I think at the end of the day, the vast majority of people at some level in some capacity are going into a business to do some function. And I think having a curiosity around that really helped me out. And what did I use as a resource to help prepare? I mean, the fact that I enjoyed it helped me prepare, but I'd watch CNBC all the time. I'd read the Wall Street Journal. I'd really try to learn. And I'm talking even when I was in company command, even as a lieutenant, I really tried to learn about other things and other organizations and stuff going on outside the military and outside the government in the business world. So I think that's just doing those things, reading the Wall Street Journal, watching CNBC, you know, you don't have to do it habitually like I do it, but start learning about it, because chances are, if you're leaving the military and leaving the government in general, you're going to be doing one of two things. You're either going into a not-for-profit, which is great, but understand that most not-for-profits operate very similar to for-profit businesses, or you're going to go into the business world. So I think it would behoove anybody to start learning about the business world. So those are as far as enrichment, that's what I did, and that's what I'd recommend to anybody. As far as resources, other resources go, the best resource you can pull down on are other people. You know, and some people are a little bit more adept at it than others. I think people who are just kind of naturally extroverted or like to be out and about, or it comes more naturally to. Other people kind of have to, you know, force themselves to do it. But as you're getting ready to transition, as you are transitioning, or even if you've transitioned out, the number one best thing you can do if you're ever thinking about, you know, either transitioning or making that pivot within the civilian world is start talking to people. So I would say, for me, the number one resource was and still is people, and kind of my social network. And if you don't have much of a social network, that's okay. Chances are, if you were in the military at any capacity, you know somebody who is out in the business world, and just reach out to them and tell them, hey, I'm thinking about transitioning. Do you have any words of advice? Can you put me in touch with anybody? And this is one thing veterans are awesome at. Like, I have yet to hear of a veteran that when a fellow veteran reached out to them and asked for help or asked for some advice or asked to be plugged into a network, said no. You know, 100% of the time we say yes. And we always go that extra mile. Not only do we sit down and like kind of impart our quote unquote wisdom on people, we also try to put that person into contact with other people that might be able to help them out. And the more people you touch base with, the more people you know, I call them informational interviews, where you just go out for coffee or for a beer or for dinner, with maybe a random person in a random industry and just learn more about what they do, 9 times out of 10, that will create something down the line that could be very good for you. So that'd be my number one piece of advice. Number one, you know, lean on people you know, lean on your networks, get out there, meet people, learn about new stuff through the people who are doing it. And then number two is just get smart. Get smart on the business world. Understand what the business world's all about. And I think if you do those two things, you're going to be just fine.
I love that, and I really like what you said about the people aspect. I think that's such a valuable way to learn. I know from some other interviews, sometimes that can be hard for veterans to reach out for help or to feel like they're inconveniencing someone. Do you have any advice on how to reach out to someone and then how to make the most out of that interaction? Or, you know, maybe put differently, any advice on what people might call networking, which, you know, I think might have a bad connotation in the military?
Yeah. Networking, that term makes us all feel sticky. But it's not, when we think about networking, we think about like kind of the social climby, corporate ladder climby person. And it's really not that. I would just call networking learning, and it's a means of learning through people. You're right. I think a lot of veterans do have difficulty asking for help. But again, I don't look at it as asking for help. I look at it as learning and meeting people to learn. So I think when you go through this process, you're going to run into a wide variety of people. And everybody has kind of a different schedule and, you know, a different role and is probably at a different level in corporate America. So you need to understand that. And the reason why I bring that up is, you know, as you're connecting with people, you're going to send an email or send a LinkedIn message to somebody that your buddy referred you to, and they're not going to get back to you, or they're going to take 2 weeks to get back to you. Or you're going to, like, you'll send an email, you'll hear back a couple days from now, and then, you know, you'll try to set up a date. They're going to reschedule a million times, almost like I did our interview tonight. And that's just because they're busy. So don't be let down by that. Don't take offense to that. Don't let that take the wind out of your sails. Just understand that people are busy. People have different capacities to answer you, and just keep plugging away, right, in a respectful way. Don't be annoying. And if somebody doesn't answer you, doesn't, you know, say it's some civilian, you know, I don't know, managing director at Goldman Sachs, three guys removed from your buddy, and he's not giving you the time of day. Okay, that's fine. Just move on to somebody else.
Yeah, so many people out there.
You know? Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's like plenty of fish in the sea, you know? It's like, you're going to find somebody that's willing to sit with you, and you're going to get some great, valuable information from. So don't get frustrated, and be yourself when you're doing it, okay? Some people are more comfortable going into, like, meet somebody at their office and meeting at, like, a boardroom or whatever. Some people are more comfortable just meeting in social situations. I met my boss in a social situation at a tailgate at West Point, having no idea who the hell he was. And, you know, I think a big part of it's really just putting yourself out there and being open to meeting new people. And then I guess as a final note, and I know I'm just kind of talking out loud here, and just really thinking through this, but as a final note, once you have a connection and you're in somebody's Rolodex and they're also in your Rolodex, you know, check in. Like, I have a list of people that I check in with once in a while, because they've been great mentors or great friends, or, you know, they might be, everybody's always, kind of moving through their careers and doing new stuff and changing jobs all the time. Just check in with people. And you'd be really surprised at how much goodness will come of that, you know, because, I mean, people get caught up in their own lives And, you know, sometimes they forget. They might forget that you're in New York, or they might forget that you're in Miami. And maybe they have some crazy new venture, and they're looking for a chief operating officer or director of operations, and they didn't forget about you out of malice. They just forgot about you because they're busy. So that'd be another little bit of advice I'd have.
Do you have advice on, because I think that's great, it's what that there's that quote, you know, like your network is only as strong as you keep it alive. Do you have advice on like how frequently to check in with people? And are you doing that, you know, for these quality people, are you doing that in person, or are you just kind of sending a little update email, or any kind of specifics around that?
You know, I think it varies from person to person and personality to personality. I don't have like a set. I'm not regimented. I know, you know, some salespeople actually have it plugged into their calendar to reach out and touch base with their contacts like every quarter or every month. For me, it varies. You know, some people I shoot an email to. I'm very unstructured about it, but there are people I send an email to, you know, four times a year, twice a year. But kind of more importantly is, I think there's this rule I heard that you should never eat lunch alone, or you should never eat dinner alone if you're out of town. So whenever I travel on business, whether it's back to New York, out in California, in Arizona, in Chicago, whenever I'm in those places and I have some spare time in my schedule, I try to make a point to meet face to face and just catch up with people. And to be honest with you, I don't even so much look at it as a network, like a business network, than something I can get out of it. I'm just genuinely interested in like what the hell people have going on. And I still keep in touch to this day. I still keep in touch with the two guys who run companies that I turned down. Do I ever think that I'm going to go back and work with those guys? Probably not. I'll probably never work for them, but there's a good chance that somewhere down the line, they're going to have something really cool going on that I might want to be a part of, or we might be able to partner on. So that's kind of my approach to it.
I love it. Well, I'm aware that we're towards the end of our time. I always like to reserve the last question just to keep it open-ended, which is, you know, you've said so much that I appreciate. I think that your advice has been spot on for so many of our listeners. I'm just curious, anything we haven't covered that you wanted to share, or kind of like parting words of wisdom?
Oh, man. Yeah, it was... this is like my time to shine or flop. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that I haven't talked about. If you're thinking about transitioning, just understand that the grass isn't always greener on the other side of the fence. I know a lot of guys who have transitioned out and wish they were back in the military and vice versa. But understand that the grass is kind of what you make it. And it's what you make it. It's not what anybody else makes it. And I'm a firm believer in, if you're miserable in life, it's probably your fault. It's not anybody else's fault but yours. So if you're miserable in the military, definitely make change, get out, transition out. But if you get out of the military and you realize you're miserable, well, the military clearly wasn't your issue. Me personally, I see a lot of people struggle with that, and it kind of frustrates me to a certain extent. So you really just have to think long and hard about the reasons why you're transitioning, or about the reasons why you want to transition from any job, really. You know, the minute I'm miserable in life in this job is the minute I walk out. That's one of the more liberating parts about being in the civilian world. I don't have to put in paperwork and wait 6 to 8 months. but that's my number. And really, it's not like a piece of advice. It's not like parting wisdom. It's just kind of been a guiding philosophy of mine that has kept me happy and kept me engaged. And I guess by some metrics made me successful.
That's great. Well, Nick, I appreciate your example to the veteran community. I just appreciate all the advice that you gave. I think more than most interviews, I think you just kind of hit on a lot of central pillars that are applicable for veterans regardless of what career they choose. And I appreciate that because I think that's helpful, you know, even if someone doesn't want to go into education learning or airlines or operations or chief of staff, I think that the principles that you're highlighting are really valuable. So thank you for sharing that.
No, thank you. This has been great. Thanks, Justin.
Surface. I'm having one of those Ferris Bueller's Day Off moments at the end of the movie where Matthew Broderick comes in and says, like, are you still here? So if you stuck around this long, thanks so much. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Nick. It has been one of those interviews I've been thinking about. It's been a couple weeks since I had this chat with him, and it's stuck in my mind. I hope it's been helpful for you as well. One quick plug to leave a positive review on iTunes. Would love that. Also, if you haven't signed up for our newsletter at beyondtheuniform.io, definitely do that. I'm starting to do more surveys, getting more information. The newsletter is my primary means of doing so. So have a great week. I'll be back next week with more interviews of awesome veterans and their stories of success in their civilian career and advice for you to take advantage of today, wherever you're at, whatever you're doing. Have a great day.